The Unexplored Territory podcast. For this episode, we invited Jerry Reinbeck to the show to talk to us about how Rubik helps securing the world's data. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Hey, we go a long way back, and I think we first met each other when you were at Data Domain, and you actually sold one of the first boxes to me when I was working for IAK Insurances, or IAK Verzekering, as we would say in Holland. And I know what you've been doing for the last couple of years, but maybe some of our listeners do not know that. Can you please give an introduction in terms of what you do at Rubik, what you did before Rubik, and maybe it's also interesting to understand how you joined Rubik.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Jerry Reinbeck. I am vice president for our cloud security technology products, running the pre-sales organization for EMEA and APJ. I've been at Rubik for over 8 years. Which is interesting because as we're recording this, actually Rubik is celebrating its 10-year birthday. Also interesting to realize that the first time we met is almost 20 years ago. So says a little bit about our ages. So I was, I rolled into computers very early on. I was, like probably many of those listening, I was the kid in the street that knew everything about computers, building their own. At 15 years old, started building even Novell-based coax networks when I was 17 for local little companies. I became a professional soldier for a couple of years, and then I moved into mainframes. I got the opportunity to become a mainframe programmer in JCL, and that was actually my first introduction to data protection and recovery. I was taking those big IBM 729 reel tapes from the mainframe to the basement every day. Did that for a while, moved into open systems, became a pre-sales consultant, as we used to call sales engineers back then. Started focusing really on developing disaster recovery scenarios. I worked for a big bank where I built a DR plan for the 12 main headquarters. Started working with products like Legato and storage tech libraries, and became more and more familiar with data protection. At one point, partner in crime, where I've been working with for a long time, Marcel Grivioun, we started our own reseller focused on backup to disk solutions with NetApp and a lot of EMC projects across Europe. In that time, I learned about this new data protection feature or this new product, and it was doing deduplication. So nobody ever heard of deduplication. People had to, I had to spell it for our first customers, and that was Data Domain. And I think you recently had my old colleague Sazala on the podcast as well. He was there very early on. I was there since 2005. I think that's when we first met each other. Spent 5 years at Data Domain, of course, with the acquisition of EMC. Then I saw this very interesting technology called Fusion.io. Which was flash on the PCI bus, which at the time was groundbreaking, accelerating databases, but also worked a lot with VMware back then because we figured out that flash on the PCI bus is actually a really good solution for VDI. I think it was a year of VDI, but I always wonder which year that was. So worked for Fusion.io for a couple of years, and then through a mutual connection, Marcel and I got a phone call from Bipul Sinha, who is the CEO of Rubrik, which back then actually had a different name. It was Scale Data back then. But I think you also met him during that time, roughly a little earlier even, I think. But yeah, so that's how I got introduced to Rubrik. I immediately signed up. I understood what they were going to do to the data protection market. And yeah, I was excited. So I joined Rubrik a little over 8 years ago as the first pre-sales outside of the US. And you know, we were a 70 people company back then, and now we're getting close to 4,000 colleagues. So it's definitely been an interesting career progression so far, with a lot of cool companies and a lot of cool technologies.
I probably should start off with congratulating you on the 10-year anniversary. I think it's a great achievement knowing where you guys came from. Back in the early days, I should probably explain, I had multiple conversations with Bipul, and I probably met up with him every month when he was still at Lightspeed. And one of the things that we were talking about was the backup and recovery space, or the disaster recovery space. And that ultimately ended up leading to this new company called Rubrik. And when he started the company, he actually asked me to sit down with a couple of engineers to have a discussion with them around backup and recovery and what that space actually looks like. And that's how the first two engineers ended up getting hired. So I was involved in that. Now, I do want to point out that I have no affiliation in any shape or form with Rubrik, and that this episode is not sponsored either. Now, before we start diving deep into what the product does and how it works, it's probably good for you to explain what or how Rubrik got started back in the day, and you know what that history actually looks like.
Yeah, I think it's good to start. You know, if you look at 10 years back, if you look at the state of the market of data protection, you know, people were starting to use hypervisors as production platforms, and but many of them were still using backup technologies that was, you know, 10, 20, 30 years old, right? Even ported from mainframe and Unix systems. And what you saw was this rise of you know, a new group of architects and administrators who was just, you know, looking at IT in a different way, right? They were looking at building their own private clouds. They were looking at automating using APIs. And they didn't want the hassle of traditional data protection, right, with you know, even tape drives and media agents and software installed on every system and managing jobs and you know, just big Excel sheets just to protect their environment. And what Rubrik set out to do was build, you know, really a platform from the ground up, an appliance model, you know, converge everything into a single system, right? All of the compute, all of the storage that you need, both high performance and capacity, build its own file system that was immutable from the ground up, make sure it's completely API controlled. So you could just, you know, basically switch on data protection with, you know, the flick of a button, basically, instead of all this manual labor. And that, you know, gave us, you know, a lot of the early customers of Rubrik were really, you know, we only had VMware protection back then, right? Nothing else was supported on the platform. It was just VMware. But there were a lot of customers who were running hundreds or thousands of VMs, building their private clouds, looking for a web-scale solution that would make it super simple to protect that environment. And that's how we got started, right? That was the early days of Rubrik. And of course, over time, the product became more and more mature in its supported platforms, right? So we started adding, you know, multiple operating systems, multiple databases, and it really grew into this highly enterprise solution that, you know, today is where we are with, you know, over 5,500 global customers. So it's been, you know, of course, throughout that 10 years, the product evolved quickly because the threat evolved quickly. Because when we started 10 years ago, and you know, I've been in data protection since 95, and we always thought that the threat was a natural disaster, a fire, you know, something happening to your data center. And that's how we built our solutions up till And even 10 years ago, when Rubrik started, you know, we were talking about dual data center and a threat, and how do you replicate backup systems, and you know, how do you get back in case of a natural disaster. The reality is, what we found out probably in the 2017-2018 region is that the biggest threat, you know, was really with you know, shadow brokers back then. It was ransomware, right? That was the one thing we really needed to be prepared for, and that was also a pivot moment for the company, because what we found out that the core design that we used for the platform, you know, this immutable API-driven live mount capabilities of VMs straight from your backup platform, actually was a really good answer against the threat of ransomware. So we started adding a lot of features and functionalities to the platform to remediate that problem, right? Threat monitoring and ransomware isolation and forensic capabilities and being able to find your last known clean state and introducing mass orchestrated recovery and like all these things that you really need to be resilient from ransomware. So, and that's, you know, the platform that we have today, right? It's really about giving peace of mind for ransomware encryption and data destruction to our customers.
Now, when you talk about the platform, one of the things you haven't mentioned yet is the fact that when you guys started out, it actually was just an appliance, right? So maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because I think that's also something which customers still end up buying today.
Yes, yes. And some not, but yes, absolutely, a large portion still does. And what we had in mind from day one is that, you know, if you want to build a data protection platform today, you're going to go to vendor A, buy the servers, you're going to go to vendor B, buy the storage, you're going to go to vendor C, buy the software, et cetera, et cetera. And what we said, you know, in this world of you know, everything's converging, why not build an appliance with everything inside of it? And if you build that and you create this four-node machine, that also has a cluster, you know, it's a masterless design, it's a cluster. So it has unlimited scalability, right? You can basically just, you know, if your environment grows, you add more nodes, you add more appliances, and it doesn't change anything because the system automatically grows. You know, the number of nodes you have, the capacity of your file system doubles and triples and quadruples with every new cluster expansion. So that appliance approach was, you know, a critical part of making it simple, right? Making it simple to scale, making it simple to operate. And of course, still today, what you saw back then is that all of the interface, all of the intelligence, and all of the management was done from the appliance. And a lot of customers are still running those appliances today. The big difference is that now that intelligence and that management console is a SaaS solution, right? So the clusters are really the horsepower in the field, but all of the brain is now the Rubrik Security Cloud, which is our SaaS platform. So yes, those appliances are still all over the world, and everybody, large to small, are still using them. But we also see a lot, of course, more and more customers that are fully cloud native, and we're running those clusters basically cloud native, so no more physical boxes. Yeah. But yes, absolutely, the appliance was part of just making data protection simpler.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And one of the features actually in the early days that really, I shouldn't say shocked me, but impressed me probably is a better word, is the search capabilities. So I think it's, you know, if you look at it from a VMware perspective, with VMware, we had one of those life-changing moments when we introduced vMotion. And I think the search capabilities, you know, for Rubrik were kind of similar, because I think that's one of those things that always impresses customers. Maybe you can explain how that works and, you know, how they came up with that.
Yeah, and I think, to echo what you just said, the first time I saw a vMotion, it just blew my mind, right? Like, what, you know, what's this trickery? Is it actually running on a different host now? Yeah. So, it's kind of the same moment for when I first time saw the interface of Rubrik, Because if you think about 10 years ago and you would ask anyone that was IT related, said, hey, how do you want to search? The answer would be the same, right? 99% of the people would say, hey, just give me a bar, right? Just give me one simple bar. I don't want to know what I'm searching, where I'm searching, what time frame I'm searching it in. Just give me a search bar and tell me, you know, what I'm probably searching for. So what we did with Rubrik from day one is basically on the top of the interface, you just get a search bar, like, you know, your favorite search provider, and just type in what you're searching for. Doesn't matter. Is it a host name? Is it a VM? Is it a file? Is it a database? Whatever it is you're searching for, just type it in there, and we'll give you the list of things that you probably meant, right? And then you click the file or the database you were looking for, and you get this interface saying, okay, I have 20 copies, one from this morning, one from yesterday evening, one from Saturday, one from Friday. Which one do you want to restore? That one. Yes. Right? It was as simple as restoring any object with like three mouse clicks. And that was a huge progression of the state of the business at that point in time.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was a backup administrator back in the day and a virtualization administrator. And as I said, I worked with Data Domain and we had Commvault. And I still, you know, recall how difficult it was back in the day to just restore a file because you had to know where it was stored in the first place. And that, you know, that alone took you, you know, potentially hours or whatever it ended up being. And then you still had to restore it. So yeah, that just sounds like amazing technology. Now, talking about restoring and backing things up, you also mentioned that Rubrik now is also a SaaS platform, but I believe you also protect SaaS platforms itself. I also think that is an interesting evolution over time.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you have to move with your customers, right? If you're serving almost 6,000 medium to large enterprises in the world, your customers demand you to grow with them. And of course, what you do is you, I remember very early on, we had a lot of debates about protecting email, right? Like Exchange was a different beast, right? You really, protecting Exchange was hard, like 6-7 years ago. And we were always wondering, should we shift our efforts more against focusing on really making Exchange on-prem protection robust and fast, or should we just skip that whole thing and focus on 365 and everything that comes with it? And I remember a lot of internal debates about that. And in the end, we chose to go for the latter version, right? We said, okay, we'll do minimal support for that, but we're going to focus on getting the best 365 solution out there. And that was a discussion like 6-7 years ago. And turns out it was the right discussion and the right answer, you know, and the right strategy that we chose. But there was, of course, internally a lot of struggle with that. But you have to protect as much as possible, right? There's no such thing as protecting everything. Every now and then we walk into a customer that's still running DB2 on Unix, on some version that they installed 12 years ago. We're probably not going to protect that workload. If you run into an environment now where people say, hey, I have VMC and I'm running Azure and I have some stuff in S3 and also, you know, all of my back office data is in 365 and I have Jira for all of my ticketing and et cetera. You have to be able to say, yes, we do all of those. And so, yes, we're adding more and more SaaS platforms, of course, 365 and Jira being the top two right now, but more and more to come. Because as our customers are growing and using more of that, you know, we grow along with them.
The other thing that I think probably is interesting to understand is we spoke about SaaS platforms. We also mentioned, of course, the VM workloads. But now we also see, of course, a lot of containers and Kubernetes instances popping up. So what does Rubrik do in that space?
Yeah, we just actually launched support for Kubernetes, but I think there's so much coming our way right now with both in Azure and AWS and GCP, Every platform has dozens of services, dozens of native database tools. You know, customer A is really focused on Aurora. The other one is really focused on Azure SQL. The next one is really focused on RDS and Kubernetes. And you have to keep in mind that you want to serve the majority, but you also want to do what some of your largest customers are requesting you to do, or prospects. So right now, it's a race. It's a race to support as many of the native cloud services that our hyperscaler friends are building and that their customers are using. But it's definitely never a dull moment, right? New services popping up every day, new feature requests every day, even more than before because of the simple speed of the hyperscalers.
Yeah, and they're also constantly evolving, I guess. You know, with something like Kubernetes, it's relatively easy because the framework has been around for a while. But yeah, if you see these services popping up within all of these different hyperscalers, it's almost impossible to keep up at this stage. And as you said, you need to figure out as well where customers are heading towards, because there's no point in supporting a solution which is not going to be used by a customer.
Yeah, or it's going to be obsolete in 18 months from now. Of course, that also goes with the ever-changing, underlying APIs of those platforms. It's definitely, it's also for us a reason why we are very close with, the hyperscalers, making sure that you're closely attached to their development organizations and engineering. So you know what's coming down the road and can act to it quickly.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I think, changing APIs is always challenging. It's something that VMware has been challenged with for the longest time. Yeah, of course, they wanted to introduce changes, but we still need to be backward compatible because there are customers that have platforms that connect to our platforms that haven't changed in the last 10 years or so. So yeah, that's really difficult. Now, let's shift the conversation a bit. You've already mentioned it at the start that within the industry, the focus first was on recovering from natural disasters or something like a fire. But of course, you also mentioned that now ransomware is probably one of those key focus areas. And in my opinion, I think that's also where Rubrik excels today. So maybe we can start talking about some of the different aspects of ransomware, and maybe you have some examples as well in terms of what customers have been faced with over the last years, because I'm guessing that you've had some customers on the phone over the last years that complained about the situation that they were in. And I think it's always good to explain what it is that customers are hitting before we actually explain how you go about protecting or recovering from those scenarios.
Yeah, I think one thing we did very early on is we actually created an organization which is RRT, which is the Rubrik Ransomware Recovery Team, and basically it's a group of highly talented people that are available 24/7 for any customer that is hit by a ransomware attack. Right, so we're just there to support them if needed, and of course throughout that process, we help these customers, but we also learn, right? We learn a lot of modus operandi of these bad actors. And what we all now start to realize is that, they will always take the path of least resistance, right? Writing a piece of software to, make use of a certain exploit, a certain zero day or whatever, it's actually not, it's complicated work. And of course, AI helps a little bit with it, but in the end, that's the hard way of getting into someone's environment. The easy way is just getting credentials and log in, right? And that's what we've really, in the last 2 years, been seeing is less and less, of the smart, firing off a bunch of encryption software coming in through a vulnerability or an exploit. But really just, spear phishing and social engineering and getting access to that data in the most simplest way possible. And that's especially the last 2 years is something that we've been seeing more and more. And I think there was a research done that I think now 91% of all attacks are identity driven, right? So they're coming in with a stolen identity in one way or another. And what you also see besides that is, I mean, some of our customers are now even talking about the good old days of ransomware, because 5-6 years ago, if you were attacked, you basically have a couple of your system encrypted. And if you had your data protection in order, you actually, you know, could come back relatively easy, don't pay the ransom, and continue. But what you see today is that, of course, they, you know, the bad actors also evolved. So what they're doing now at first is basically extracting data from the environment, right? They're taking it out, and then they're encrypting and destroying. But the double extortion tactic of, you know, first stealing sensitive information and then threatening to publicize that, is becoming a more effective strategy, because people are starting to get their DR in order, right? And their cyber resilience and their cyber recovery solutions. So that's the biggest change we've seen in the last 2 years, is that more and more attacks are based on double extortion. And it's a lot harder, right? It's a lot harder to protect yourself from data being stolen than from data being encrypted, because there's no such thing as an unsteal button, right? There is such a thing as a, you know, unencrypt button if you have your cyber recovery in order. Unfortunately, that doesn't work for data theft.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think also one of the things you brought up, like you have an unencrypt option. That only works if you pay the ransom, if you don't want to pay the ransom. And the solution has been dormant for, I don't know, 3 months or 4 months. Then if you need to recover to 3-4 months back, the amount of revenue typically associated with it is ridiculous. So you probably have seen that with customs as well, where it has been around for months and sitting there without people realizing it.
Yeah. And that's, of course, they come in a certain angle, and they might get really lucky and immediately find the information they were looking for. But normally speaking, they would be scouting and planting, software for days or even weeks, sometimes even months. Although that window is shortening more and more because they're getting more effective, sometimes they still are in that environment for weeks already, just reconnaissance and trying to find and escalate the privileges, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, unencrypt, you know, there's two versions. One is you have your recovery in order and you do it yourself. The second one is pay the ransom and get the possibility to decrypt everything. But with the data theft part, the only way to really, you know, have an answer to that is to make sure that you limit their chances of success, right? And that is where technologies like posture management, right? Data security posture management comes in. So yeah, it's a constant evolution, the bad guys win a few steps, the good guys win a few steps, and girls, I think we're in this rat race for numerous years to come.
Now, you mentioned data security posture. It's not something that we've discussed on the podcast before, so it's probably good to explain, you know, what it is, but also what Rubrik does in that space, because I think it's probably one of those things that the listeners should be interested in.
Yeah. I think what you see today, and especially here in the EU, we see things like DORA and NIS2, and cyber resilience is really the answer to any cyber threat. And I know it's a little bit of a generic word, but what it basically means is make yourself as resilient as possible for any threat angle, meaning before it happens, when it happens, and after it happens, right? Like, how do you respond as soon as possible, as fast as possible? And of course, as we saw our customers being attacked by double extortion attacks, we thought, how do we help them with that, right? What is the answer to double extortion? What is the answer to data theft? And the reality is really locking down your environment, right? It's and as an industry, we now call that DSPM, right? Data security posture management. But it's really about, what is your posture as a company when it comes to sensitive data, right? So where the location where you stored your customer information, your employee information, your financial information, your company secrets and IP, the locations where you store that. How do you treat those locations? How do you make sure that everything that you think you set out to do, like this is how we treat data in our company, how do you make sure you enforce that and you monitor that? And because the reality is people make mistakes, right? Sometimes on purpose, sometimes by accident, but there's always a user in an environment that makes a copy of something, puts it in an Excel sheet, doesn't realize it's full of sensitive PII information, places it on a OneDrive or an S3 bucket that was also shared with external parties, and now you have a data breach, right? That is the kind of stuff with DSPM that you can remediate, right? So you want to find all of the unnecessary data, clean that up, give it the right access properties. You want to implement a model of least privileges that only the people that need to see that sense of data actually have access to that data. Because what you see in reality, in a lot of companies, people have been around for 20 years and they've seen AD migrations and moving to cloud and now switching to Entra. And like some of these people have almost like, you know, administrator level access to the platforms. And that person might just be a finance person or an HR person. And why do they have access to all of these contracts and employee information and customer data? Maybe you need to lock that down, right? And really secure your environment as good as possible. So once you've done that, once you've cleaned the data real estate, right? So once you removed all the sensitive information for locations where it shouldn't be, and once you know that your access governance, your security is how it should be, now you can implement a policy to keep it that way, right? So you can say, okay, in our company, we always treat employee and customer data in this way, right? It should be encrypted at this level. It should be stored here. It should be never outside of this country. You know, you can put these kind of parameters, these swim lanes on your data where you say, okay, this is our posture, right? This is how we treat information in this company. And now with DSPM, you can implement those policies and make sure that if somebody breaks one of those policies, it gets sent to your incident response team, your alerting tool of choice. And that's really what DSPM is about. And that is why, as Rubrik, we acquired this really cool technology from a company, Laminar, last year. So, you know, it's, and again, it's moving with what our customers are seeing as threats to their environment. And how do you help with that? So for the last 6 months, I've been really focused on, introducing DSPM to customers because, you know, like you and many on the show probably never heard of that acronym. We love our acronyms in our industry. So we threw in a new one, DSPM.
That's a nice one. Now, I can imagine and I can relate to it as well. I still recall I worked for a company where everyone actually had access to a spreadsheet which detailed all of the information of all of the employees when it came to compensation and benefits. You can imagine that led to a lot of weird conversations with management when people saw what their colleagues were earning. So, yeah, it's definitely really important to understand who has access to what and to limit it when you can and be alerted as well when you end up in a situation like that. Now, of course, the other aspect as well is when you find yourself in a situation when you're under attack or potentially a breach, you need to have some kind of, you know, analytics platform or a detection platform that can verify the environment to validate what's happening. So does Rubrik also do anything in that space? So do you have some kind of, you know, data threat analytics platform or detection monitoring solution?
Yeah, and we do. Of course, there are a lot of points of measuring, right? So people do this on the network level, on the user level, or even on the endpoint. You know, people have things like Carbon Black and other things on their endpoints. But what we are data security experts, right? And we strongly believe that we need to stay in our own swim lane and not move outside of that data part. So for us, the starting point is always data. So what you can do now, once you realize and you have your DSPM implemented and your policies in our place, and you integrate with the customer's identity provider, now you can start understanding patterns and you can understand anomalies, right? You can understand like, hey, wait a minute, this person has, you know, logged in through this profile for last 2 years, and they've always done this kind of work, and they've always accessed these kind of files. Now, all of a sudden, they're logging in from a different location, and they're looking at completely different files, and they're downloading them to their local laptop. That's an anomaly. That's weird, right? And that is a potential active threat. So from a DSPM perspective, we can actually start monitoring unusual behavior of users related to sensitive data in your organization. So that's extremely powerful, right? If you can figure out that somebody's logged in through an existing identity, got their credentials one way or another, but because of their behavior, you can spot that it's not normal behavior, that gives you the ability to, you know, potentially terminate that connection and just really potentially prevent a disaster, right? The other thing is, of course, with Rubrik, we make a lot of backups of, you know, very large infrastructures and like all the data sets and all the VMs and all the databases and all of the cloud workloads. They are now indexed and processed by this Rubrik Security Cloud. So what you can also do is start scanning for known issues, right? So indicators of compromise, certain signatures of known ransomware. You can actually start using the Rubrik Security Cloud. You can actually fire that off on your backup indexes, and it can actually say, hey, wait a minute, I just found this known ransomware string inside the backup of this machine. You know, that's been there for the last 2 weeks. So it's probably a good idea to isolate that machine, isolate that backup, and fall back to a last known good state, right? So it's really a multi-vector, multi-angled approach to, like I said in the beginning, right, to become as resilient as possible, because new methods, new vectors are being developed constantly. So you have to have a multi-vector approach on cyber resiliency.
Yeah, and I guess one of those things that also becomes very challenging is, where do you recover to? Because potentially, you know, somewhere in the environment, there's still some kind of breach. So is that something that Rubrik helps with as well?
Yes, yeah, of course. And that is also, I mean, that is, in the end, it's really cool to have, you know, super scalable and easy backup. But the whole reason why we're doing this is because of the recovery. So when the moment is there, it needs to be as simple and fluid as possible. And, you know, back in the days, you had a choice, right? You had data center A, and if you had to recover and something was bad, you would fall back to data center B. Now, especially with a large-scale attack, it's actually a lot easier to utilize cloud resources as a DR platform, right? So what we've actually created is a mass orchestrated recovery platform within the Rubrik Security Cloud, where you not only can recover to a different cloud location, because those resources are there, or to your own cloud location and just realize like, okay, these are the affected systems, ignore those, turn them off and spin up a brand new environment. But the cool thing about it, it will actually orchestrate the recovery order. So if your primary applications, if your primary e-commerce application is affected, the back end of that e-commerce application is a large collection of, you know, web servers and databases and connections to different platforms and operating systems, and actually recovering those in the right order, bringing them back online in the right order, that you basically have a blueprint, a runbook, where you say, okay, application X is now infected, let's bring it back in the right order in the state of 3 days ago. To have that fully orchestrated is such a massive difference from where we were 10 years ago, right? There was these massive run books, and I worked for customers that, before I worked at Rubrik, we had like big paper stacks in a safe that was basically a runbook of press this command, restore this machine, and it was like hundreds of pages of documentations. And now to have, you know, a blueprint that you can simply click to recover into a cloud location, it's fantastic. It's mind-blowing for me to see how far we've come. But that makes life a whole lot easier when everyone's hair on fire running through the hallway because, you know, a massive ransomware attack just happened.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I found myself once in that situation where a whole data center went down. I actually had to grab all of the paperwork that we had in terms of how to recover all of those workloads and didn't have to restore anything. I just had to power everything on in the right order. And before I figured out for certain applications which services needed to be started first, I think I spent, 6-7 hours just to get 200 or 300 virtual machines up and running in the right order with all of the applications. It's just such an insane amount of work. Now, you've mentioned that you can recover in the Rubrik cloud as well. Does it have multiple regions for those who don't want to see that data travel to the US or maybe, APJ, whatever it is?
Yes, of course. Yes, the Rubrik Security Cloud is in every region available for our customers, and it's also, it's also their cloud of choice, right? Where they want to recover to. The Rubrik Security Cloud is really that orchestrator, that platform that gives you the visibility and the recovery options, and all of the forensics and the monitoring, and everything is in that one platform. But the underlying both sources and targets that you want to use for backup and recovery, that's really up to the customer's choice, whatever hyperscaler, whatever region, whatever country that they want to do that in, right? This is absolutely global. We have a lot of global customers with, data centers in every region, and especially that functionality is, very powerful for those kind of customers.
Awesome. Well, that was it. Thanks for a fantastic episode, Jerry. Any famous last words or anything else you would like to plug?
I'm just really glad to be here, especially on this great week where we're celebrating our 10th birthday. I've been, a pure stroke of luck to come into this company 8 years ago. And seeing the whole evolution and working also with the broader VMware community from day one. We had so much fun in the early days of building VMware recovery scenarios. So, big thank you to the whole community for always, great collaboration and made a lot of friends in the industry. So it's been an absolute blast and it was great to talk to you, and that was it.
And that's it. We've reached the end of another episode of the Unexplored Territory podcast. If I have to summarize today's episode, then my key takeaway would be that over the last decade, Rubrik evolved from a virtualization backup solution into a full data protection and data security platform. Again, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast or rate the podcast wherever possible. If you have any feedback, send us a message on Twitter on @UnexploredPod. Last but not least, I would like to thank Jerry for a fantastic episode.